I tend to attract people that want to do what I do. So like get like a kind of like a distressed house and then get that renovated. 'Cause I find I don't know, kind of like revitalizing like an unused house into something that you can use. And also that's how you add value, right? Like if done correctly, you're
Oh, for sure. You
adding.
wouldn't get to 11, 12% with any of the properties that we're recommending to people. That just will not happen.
Yeah, most people that I attract, I guess, we attract, they're okay with that risk and they find that very intriguing, right? It's like, yeah, man, this can turn into this. Like, okay, let's do it.
Hi there, folks, and welcome or welcome back to Nippon Trading International's Japan Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Ziv Nakajima again, and this podcast is brought to you, among others, by Emil Gorgis of realestate.jp. He's a Tokyo real estate agent who specializes in serving international or mixed nationality families who are looking for the perfect family home. So Emil's an Australian. He's been living here in Japan for over two decades now. And for about half of that time, he's been buying, selling, and managing real estate properties in Tokyo on behalf of his own family and a great many happy clients. And he also acts as a mortgage broker on behalf of his clients. So he's got dedicated loan officers in many of the Japanese mega banks. And if you're a regular listener of the podcast, you probably already know him from our JREP, the Japan Real Estate Experts panel sessions, which means that you're already aware of the fact that the man is an absolute fountain of wisdom on all things related to real estate in Japan, and in particular to family homes, the greater Tokyo metropolitan area, and mortgages. And most importantly, he's incredibly generous with his time and advice, which he's more than happy to provide at no cost or commitment to anyone asking. So if you've been thinking about buying your home in Tokyo, but you've been sitting on the fence for a while, or you just want to have a chat in English with a real expert, drop him a line on sales@realestate.jp. Hit him up today and start exploring your options. All right, so pretty excited about today's episode, I won't lie. This is a conversation that I've recently had with the awesome Shu Matsuo. If you've been living under a rock, then you might not know, but if you're at all interested in Japanese real estate, you probably know of him. He's Japanese-American, and for the past couple of years, he's established a very prolific online presence, especially on YouTube, where he films himself looking at buying, renovating, and profiting from old abandoned Japanese homes, Akiya, a service which he now provides to others as well. And I think he wanted to interview me, but I was super curious about him and his work, so not really sure who interviewed who. In any case, the conversation was super interesting. We talked about what he does exactly and how, who are his typical clients, what he thinks about the market here as opposed to his experience in the States, what he used to invest in previously and what he invests in now, his social media presence, of course, and traditional media experience, his current and future business plans, the service he offers to his clients. And then we switched roles a bit and he interrogated me about our services here at NTI, particularly about our fee structure and portfolio management plan options. He also wanted to know what does our staff roster look like now and how we grew over the years. So a lot of under the hood stuff, which I know many of you really like to hear about. I hope you'll enjoy this chat between us. Have a listen and I'll see you again on the other side.
Japan's been doing good in the last 15 years, but basically you can kind of expect capital appreciation to happen more over there than you would here. Here it's always iffy. It might not.
So for them, it's like, oh my God, you can actually get something like 1/10 of a price, something that they would spend on like a down payment, maybe smaller, and you can get half in Japan, right? What's going on, everyone? So today I have an exciting episode. I just had a conversation with Ziv, who's the main person of Nippon Trading International. You probably know him because he's been in this business for much longer than I have. Basically, you know, he's been doing what we've been doing all over Japan. Yeah, we got connected a few months ago and we finally had a chance to chat over Zoom. Yeah, I got to ask him questions. He got to ask me questions and it kind of felt like, you know, a little bit of a coaching call. He was kind of giving me some advice and I learned a lot from, you know, how he operates and how he helps his clients. So hopefully, you know, we can do a better job as well. So, you know, if you're wondering about how our businesses work, this video is a must watch and I think you're gonna enjoy it. Make sure you watch the whole thing to learn about how each of our businesses operates and how we're different And if you're not sure who to work with, maybe this might be an answer for you. Just a quick disclaimer, at the time I had an eye infection, so my right eye, kind of weird. And you might have noticed it in the previous videos, but now it's better now. So, you know, I look more symmetrical, but I kind of wanted to throw it out because I don't look like myself. And also my background too. We had just moved into a new place, so our carpets were kind of rolled in the background, but you know, don't worry about it. So hopefully you like the content. Enjoy the interview with Ziv.
All right, Ziv-san. Yeah.
I'm gonna ask you so many questions about what you do, but the first thing that comes to mind, sorry, I'm starting off interviewing you. You can go ahead and interview.
Oh, no, go for it.
So the boot camp, that's really interesting for me. I saw on your website that you do boot camps, training seminars, I suppose they are, right?
Yeah, that's just online course that I created with a friend of mine, Colin Kozik. Yeah, he's one of the people that really inspired me to, you know, take a deep dive into this Japanese real estate scene. Because up until then, I was, you know, only investing in the U.S. and I was actually kind of against the Japanese real estate investing. Yeah, I had a very different view. And, you know, I think some of it is still true to me. You know, I just see it differently and it can work for some people. And for me, it's like, it's more exciting because I'm here. You know, I'm quite happy with the portfolio in the US, but, you know, it keeps getting harder and harder. But yeah, like Japanese real estate, I think I could learn a lot more since I'm here. You know, just building relationships, network, and you know, that really got me way more excited than investing in the US at this point.
So when you say since when, when did that start?
About a year and a half ago. Yeah.
Oh, maybe. Okay.
Yeah.
You're all over the place. I thought you were in it a lot longer than that, to be honest.
That's when I started to getting into Japanese real estate. Yeah.
That's really interesting. So what's your portfolio, or what was your portfolio like in the US, like before you like introduced Japanese real estate into it? What were you investing in or still investing in there?
Yeah, so I had back then 7 properties, all small multifamily houses. So I think 19 units at the time, back then, across 3 markets, 3 different states. And, you know, they were doing okay, except for one. So I ended up selling it about a year ago. That was a 6-unit apartment, actually, and then purchased another duplex. So went down to 6 properties, and units wise, I think, you know, went down to 13. And then I still have those properties to this date. And in Japan, I have 3 single family houses. One's rented now, and 2 I purchased them in the last couple months, and they're going through renovation right now. So only 3 in Japan, but hopefully I can grow that portfolio quicker than I did my US portfolio.
Well, capital wise it'll probably take a bit less. 3 properties in Japan versus 3 properties in the US, unless it's like a central Tokyo or Niseko property, is gonna be a lot cheaper, right?
Exactly. Although I leveraged every single one of my properties in the US, and then I bought all the 3 properties here in cash. So initial investment, yeah, still a little cheaper here. I kind of prefer that way now. Now that I'm in the position to, I probably could get a loan in Japan because I'm a Japanese citizen and resident. But I help foreigners who can't get loans here. So I, you know, I figured it's only fair if I did the same thing, so I can kind of lead by example. So yeah.
So you're living here in Japan now. So are you managing your properties in the U.S. remotely?
Correct. Yeah. So I have property managers in the US, in each of the markets.
I found that that might be just my experience. I've heard similar things, but also different things from other people. But it's difficult to find good, reliable, professional property managers in the States, isn't it? Or maybe it depends on the property profile or the state, I'm not sure. But there's a lot more, I feel, I could be wrong, please correct me, but there's a lot more that can go wrong when managing remotely in the US versus Japan, right?
Yeah. From my personal experience, I think that statement is correct. I had pretty bad property management, for lack of better words, in the US, and it was just a nightmare every day. And finally, let them go, and then hired someone way better. And just the difference a good property manager can make is very super important. So yeah, I know that firsthandedly.
Which states are you invested in?
Main state is Minnesota, where my wife is from. We have property in New York, upstate New York, and one in Florida.
Okay, I don't know Minnesota much, but New York and Florida should be a bit easier quality-wise. I mean, tenant quality-wise and professional services, right?
I mean, upstate New York. So this city called Syracuse, which is like, you know, way cheaper than, you know, the rest of like the New York most people think, because New York City is like just a league on its own. But Syracuse is a lot more affordable. Tenant quality, it's like, it's okay. Very, very stable tenants that we have now. Florida, we're going through a turnover right now. Actually, Minnesota portfolio is by far my favorite. It's been the team is great. Cash flow and also appreciate, like, you know, it's very balanced. A lot of people don't give enough credit about the Midwest market, but I actually really like how it's performing, our portfolio there.
So it's kind of, I guess, compared to Japan, at least, I mean, Japan's been doing good in the last 15 years, but basically you can kind of expect capital appreciation to happen more over there than you would here. Here it's always iffy.
Yeah.
It might not, right?
Yeah, totally.
So then what was, before you entered the Japanese market, what were those negative impressions of yours? Like, what were you thinking or still thinking that is less attractive here?
So like, exactly what you said, appreciation, you can't really expect it. And until that point, I was like, what's the point if you can't build capital gains? Because that's how you build wealth, right? Tremendous wealth. It's not through cash flow. It's through appreciation. It's through, you know, building equity. And at the time, I was really into that. But, you know, like what most people want is cash flow, especially if you're like from the US, like California or something. It is so hard to get into the California real estate market, because
always almost negatively geared kind of thing, right?
Oh, yeah. It's like
negative cash flow, like you're just gonna bleed until you can't handle it anymore, hoping that, you know, it's gonna appreciate in the next 5-10 years. And if you can withstand that tough times, sure, it's gonna be worth twice as much, three times as much, maybe 10x, right? You have the equity, and that's another game to play. And I was kind of really into that, like building net worth, like building equity. It's one way to play the game. But you know, Japan, I think it is, I hope, and I think it'll continue to get better, the real estate market, because a lot of people are now paying attention.
Fingers
crossed. Yeah. It's not, I don't expect it to be like the next California in, you know, 20, 30 years. But I think there's going to be, as long as you buy in the right places, you know, it will appreciate probably more slowly.
Steadily, yes. Safe and stable. And there's no leaps and bounds like you have with the cycles in other countries. But I think, yes, I agree. It's barring major global events, I think. And even during major global events, Japan's kind of like the safe haven that people go to when there is a turmoil overseas, right?
Yeah.
Or at least the yen is.
Exactly. And then a lot of people still are anti-investing in Japan. And I think that's actually a good time to invest. Like half the people are like really skeptical, like, no, it's not going to be good. Because if everyone thinks it's a good investment, it's too late, right? And I was willing to make that bet. I've spoke to quite a few investors that are successful in Japan, and you know, from what they said, they knew from, you know, many years ago. They're just kind of I think people like me started to realize, like, actually this is an opportunity. So I decided to make a bet and really shift my thesis and really go all in on Japan.
That's fantastic.
Okay. Now, here's some big news for anyone interested in Akiya, the abandoned vacant homes that are abundant all around Japan for very attractive purchase prices. Akiya Mart, our latest sponsor, is a recently founded online search and discovery tool for Japanese real estate. Its user interface will be very familiar to users of Zillow or Redfin. The platform essentially scouts the internet for property listings, translates them into English, and displays prices in US dollars, all in one place and with a dynamic map interface that makes browsing, finding, and shortlisting your favorite properties a piece of cake. Which any of you have been struggling with the dozens, if not hundreds, of Japanese property websites that are available online and their very clunky interface will probably find a real blessing. They've got already over 500,000 listings on the platform, and the database is expanding daily, ranging from abandoned rural homes to luxury urban properties. AkiyaMart makes it easy to find your dream home in Japan, regardless of your budget. Now, while the platform is essentially free for use, here's an exclusive offer for listeners of the podcast. You can use the promo code NTI to receive $5 off AkiyaMart Pro. The subscription will unlock a bunch of very attractive features for you, including unrestricted access to the entire nationwide property database and a whole range of filters, which will help power charge your search for that elusive perfect home and make it even easier. So hop over to akiya-mart.com. That's AKIYA-MART, akiya-mart.com, and kick off your search today.
Okay, so in Japan, I'm guessing, or maybe I'm wrong, not single or multifamily homes, right? Probably other types of property profile?
Yeah, they're all single family houses.
Single family, like wooden structures.
Wooden structures, yeah, like typical Akiya. So like I'd buy Akiya cheap and get them renovated. Partially, you know, really kills me that there are so many empty houses in Japan and, you know, many of them are not being utilized. And, you know, I single-handedly, I won't be able to do that much, but at least if I buy an Akiya in a good location, fix it up, and if I'm able to rent it out, kind of like revitalizing, you know, that community in a way, right? Because otherwise it just would have stayed abandoned. So that's kind of like the attractiveness of Akiya investing. I'm sure I'm going to diversify and, you know, get into multifamily in the future, but right now I enjoy what I'm doing and helping others do the same.
So you fix them up yourself or half yourself, like semi DIY or all DIY, or you find good cheap laborers? How do you do it?
I wish I could be Anton, right? Like, cause he's so talented and he can
something
else. Yeah, he can do it himself. I'm not gonna even pretend like I could do, you know, like one tenth of what he does. No, I just hire people who know how to do it. You know, in renovation, you can just spend a lot of money to make it good. So, you know, I wanna make sure that, you know, we're staying cost conscious and, you know, make it good enough to rent it out. So that's kind of like my game right now.
And you started this about a year and a half ago, you said?
The first property in Japan I bought last year in December, actually. So. Okay. About three in the last, what is it, like 7-8 months?
So the plan moving forward is you're going to keep focusing on these for the higher yield potential?
Yeah, I, you know, long-term tenants, so it's a two-year lease. So that's kind of like what I know from my experience in investing in the US. So I just kind of wanted to get into it, doing what I know from another market. And then just get comfortable with this. And then eventually, you know, I do think short-term rentals is, there's a tremendous opportunity in Japan and I do want to get into it, but I didn't want to do them at the same time. I want to make sure that, you know, I have a solid base of doing this. And maybe eventually, maybe like a year from now, getting into like short-term rentals, you know, do a more larger scale renovation. You got to be more strategic with picking the location, you know, kind of like what Tracy and Anton are doing. But I'm not quite there yet in terms of short-term rentals. So
one step.
So the first one you got in December last year, and then you got this year, you got another two.
Yeah, last year one, and I got two so far this year. Yeah.
And similar profile, similar locations or other locations?
Yeah, they're all in Yokohama, which is where I'm based. And, you know, I could, if I wanted to, I could visit on the same day. And I know this area well, better than other areas. So I wanted to kind of stick to what I know first. But, you know, I also visit Saitama, Chiba, just right outside of Tokyo. You know, a lot cheaper than Tokyo, but they're still, you know, pretty accessible to Tokyo. And rental demand is, you know, relatively high. So those are the areas that I go after.
And do you recommend, when you train people or consult to people as you do, we, for example, recommend to people who are hands-off, so they're not like you, they're not like Anton, they're not going to be sniffing around for good deal Akiyas and getting in contact with owners, and they don't have the local connections to recommendation. So let's say they have everything they do, they have to do remotely through someone like us or someone like yourself. So there's an added layer of payment there. Do you recommend to them to go for the same kind of property profile that you're going for?
Really up to them. You know, some clients, they they want something newer. They want something that's rebuildable, you know, after like a certain year, like 1981, you know, has the earthquake standard and whatnot. Some are don't care. You know, they care more about the returns. I share with them like what I do personally. But I also try to listen to what they want to do. But, you know, I'm pretty active on, you know, social media. So a lot of people that come to us, they usually have consumed a lot of the content that I put out. So they end up, you know, wanting to do something similar usually.
And do you think that's feasible? Do most of your clients in Japan or overseas, residents, non-residents?
Yeah, so I get a lot of people reaching out from the U.S., mostly the U.S., and out of the U.S., mostly California. California and maybe Hawaii, so where real estate is super expensive, right? So for them, it's like, oh my gosh, like you can actually get something with like one-tenth of a price or something like that, something that they would spend on like a down payment, maybe smaller, and you can get a house, you know, in Japan, right? Like outright. So that seems to be the attractiveness of investing in Japan for a lot of those folks.
And at least initially, I guess they have to be a bit more hands-on, because like you're saying, you're buying something slightly at least dilapidated, and then you're going through the motions of running through the renovation and screening tenants and so forth. So you're basically buying into a bit of a project at the start before it's smooth sailing after at least a few months, I guess. How long did it take you to find tenants?
Like a couple months to renovate, and then about 3 months, to find a tenant.
And for all of your other properties, what kind of tenant profiles did you end up getting? I'm just curious because we keep recommending different things to people, because most of our clients are the type that want to be completely hands-off, the investors at least. I mean, holiday home shoppers are a totally different matter, but investors want to be hands-off. So we always recommend to them, you know, the smoothest, easiest, hands-off turnkey properties that you can get are either condo units or aparto, right? Like small building apartments with multi-unit blocks. Would you recommend the kind of deals that you run through, would you recommend to people who want to be passive and hands-off?
I tend to attract people that want to do what I do. So like get like a kind of like a distressed house and then get that renovated. Because I find, I don't know, kind of like revitalizing like an unused house into something that you can use. And also that's how you add value, right? Like if done correctly,
For sure, you wouldn't get to 11-12% with any of the properties that we're recommending to people. That just will not happen.
Most people that I attract, I guess, we attract, they're okay with that risk, and they find that very intriguing, right? It's like, this can turn into this, like, okay, let's do it. So it's when we're going through it, you know, there are ups and downs, right? It's like, oh, this, you know, we found this, or like, you know, it's taking a lot more than we thought in terms of like removing all the items that the previous owner left behind. So, you know, it's going to take a couple more weeks for this and all that stuff. But I think they actually enjoy the process of, you know, seeing the transformation, I guess.
And it's good for your content too. It's sexy stuff, not like the concrete, cubes that we sell and these kind of talks. You know, I don't have anything sexy to put on YouTube, but you and Anton are. So how did you end up getting into social media? You're very prolific there. Your YouTube channel is one of the most famous ones for Japanese real estate. How did you end up doing that?
You know, I studied media in college. So, you know, I always had this, you know, interest with traditional media. So I did TV, I did print journalism, and you know, I spoke in front of the camera as a speaker as well. So I wanted to do something different, like you know, podcasts. They're like podcasts, you know, you can do like picture social media, but like doing videos, right? That's doing that kind of thing, like consistently, it takes a lot of work, but also not everyone is willing to do it.
You know, like, bravo on the production value. I'm very interested looking at your video, comparing them to our video. Like, wow, this guy puts a lot of work into that.
Thank you. Appreciate it. It's my team. All I do is just film and, you know, get the content to the editors, and they do a phenomenal job. Yeah, I just wanted to do something that most people are not willing to do, which is to talk in front of the camera. And, you know, when I was starting, like, I was also shy. I was like, what am I doing? Like, no one's watching this. Like, who?
So that was your first experience with like, yeah, live video, not live, but I mean, like, I recorded video. Oh, wow.
Yeah, I committed to myself. I made a commitment to myself. No matter how few views or how many subscribers I get, I will do this once a week for 1 year and see how it goes. And then 1 year turned into, it's almost 2 years now. November marks my 2 year anniversary since I became very serious about social media. Yeah, it's really incredible how far we've come. So
good stuff. So plans for the future, you're saying, is to continue to expand on similar profile, eventually slightly slip into hospitality, Airbnb, Minpaku's.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, you've been in this game for longer, and I'm sure you have so much more experience, and you got so many people reaching out to you.
Nothing hands-on like you, though. We're very, I mean, everything we do is we do through third parties. Like, we utilize people like you. We don't do anything ourselves.
I'm, you know, building connections as well, so that, you know, we're not doing everything on our own. Like, renovation we can't do. Like, we definitely work with, you know, companies that can do. The biggest goal is to build a sustainable system business so that we can actually take in more clients. We're actually having to say no way more often than saying yes to the people that reach out to us, and I know we're missing opportunities, but we're just, to be honest, like, our business is not at that level yet to scale. So I really want that's my I guess biggest goal, like, next step. I want to build so that we can serve more people better, faster. And in order to do that, you know, I got to do more of what I do now, but also create a system, you know, hire people. So it's kind of like becoming a business, and, you know, I do want to scale up. I don't mind going slowly, but, you know, I do want this to be something that can be more impactful for the people that we work with, but also, you know, Japan's long-term future. So that's the big vision that we have.
Yeah, Japan needs a lot more people like you. So the you've mentioned that you're leveraging your US properties and you're borrowing to invest in your Japanese properties. Is that
right? Oh, no.
Right?
No, so the US properties, they're leveraged. So I have loans on every single one of those properties. But in Japan, since I'm highly leveraged in the US, I decided to just not use any leverage and see how far I can go.
The kinds of properties you're buying, I'm not sure how much leverage you'll be able to get.
Yeah, exactly. That's another reason too. You know, you just move faster. You know, there's you don't have to report into the banks. Because every time I try to get a loan, like, I feel like I'm stripped. I'm naked financially, right? And it's not the greatest feeling. And, you know, not having to do that is pretty freeing. So hopefully I can go as far as I could go. But, you know, with the low interest rates here, it's hard to say no to, you know, pretty much free money in Japan.
Yeah, for sure. And I guess last question for me, which is something I've also been asking Anton, and I keep waiting for a yes. Will people be able at some point to buy into your projects to be your financiers and get a percentage of the equity?
There are a few of our clients who actually suggested it. Like, why aren't you doing that? Like, you know, get your clients to finance all the deals and then become like a, I guess, general partner, or, you know, you get like a equity part of the deal by doing the work, but you're not putting in any of your money, kind of thing. So I've thought about it. I think eventually once we become really good at what we do, you know, that might be the way to go. Like, that makes sense, like, to grow your business, grow our business. Maybe. But right now, like, we're not there, to be honest. We want to just serve, you know, one client at a time, and we want them to come back. Some clients, returning clients. So that means they're happy, which is good. So, and then, yeah, if we run out of our own money, and you know, if it only makes sense to get finance from, you know, other people, maybe, but probably not anytime soon.
Okay. So
now, if you've attended any of our recent JREP Summit events in Tokyo or online, you've probably heard our sponsor, Robert Miller from Innovatius.com. He's been in WebDiz Solutions here in Japan for the past 25 years, and he's also an active investor in Japanese real estate property, as well as global online property, which is his specialty and what his company Innovatius is all about. They offer a full suite of website services for entrepreneurs and small business owners, including all aspects of web design and management, backup and updates, content formatting and editing, proactive maintenance and error fixing, you name it, with a strong focus on SEO excellence, which is what gets you those hardcore top-of-the-list search engine rankings. But there is a difference. Innovatius works off a simple, all-inclusive monthly subscription model, as opposed to the typical outdated and confusing project model. So you never have to wonder how much any request for any work to be done on your website might cost. It's always $497 per month. And if that's not enough, if you've mentioned you've heard of their services on the Japan Real Estate Podcast, you'll also get 10% off this monthly price for life. Also, and equally important, if not more, you can try out Innovatius for just 1 month, then switch them off, on again later if you want, and so forth. There are no minimum subscription terms. Now, if you're a small business owner, managing and growing a website is super distracting and time-consuming, right? That's exactly where Innovatius comes in. Robert's team takes care of all of that for you so that you can focus on what you do best. So feel free to email Rob on robert@innovatius.com, and his team will conduct a full SEO and website audit on your site, reveal anything that you should address to increase your website's appeal, and provide you with an easy-to-read, detailed report with your own branding so that you can make some informed decisions on your online strategy and watch your business grow as you implement it. So once more, robert@innovatius.com. Drop him a line and get your website reviewed today.
So when you say serve clients, they come to you and you help them buy and renovate and tenant properties. So you do for them what you're doing for yourself, basically, and you charge them a fee. How do your fees work, just for people who are interested?
And this is what I want to ask you as well, but I'm happy to share what, you know, what we do. So we're I'm not a licensed agent yet. I'm actually studying slowly. I thought about taking the test this year, but I don't think it's going to happen. But, you know, since we're not a licensed agent, or our positioning is more of a like a concierge or like consultant, kind of like an extension of, you know, our clients, right, who cannot be here.
Yeah, proxy.
Yeah, proxy. Yeah. And, you know, we serve not just our clients, but we tremendously serve the agents that we work with, because without us, they can't really do the work directly. So we come in, yeah.
Not with foreigners, but they can't, they're obviously doing it with Japanese, right?
Exactly, for foreigners. And they want business from foreigners, as, you know, a lot of
that people. Already sounds very different to what we're doing, because we always have to convince the agents that they'll never have to speak to the scary foreigners, and everything will be done through us. And yeah. It's very different, actually. So you deal directly, you create relationships with realtors who are interested in working with foreign clients.
Yeah. First, we have returning agents as well. Like, they usually come back to us and like, okay, that was way easier than we thought. Like, can we do more of those again? Right. I'm sure you have that at, you know, some of those as well. So I have an educational background. I'm a licensed teacher. I'm a huge believer in education. So like, I want to kind of train and educate both parties, right? Like the clients and also the agents too. So that if they decide to work with us again, you know, they know what we do, so that we kind of try not to like just tell everything, but like, here, this is what we do. And then these are the, like, the power of attorney documents, you know, that we use. Like, you can actually use it, like, happy for you to use it next time. Yeah, exactly. No need for Jumikyo. Affidavits, right? So that, you know, hopefully we provide so much value that they're going to want to come back and work with us. And then the second time, it's much easier because, you know, they have a base of how that was done. So that's what we try to do with every transaction.
Okay, so do you charge them a commission? Do you only charge the buyers?
We only charge the buyers. Yeah, so we don't charge the agents. Yeah.
So how much would somebody who wants to use your services to do a purchase like that, a product like that, how much do you charge?
Oh, man. Okay, well, people who apply find out. But it depends on the level of the service.
We got listeners, man. They might want to hit you up. You know, not as many as yours, but we do have some subscribers, and I'm sure they'd be interested.
We definitely transformed in over the past a year and a half. We started out, we wanted to make sure that we're doing it right. But now, like, our demand is so much higher than what we can supply. So, you know, we turned down a lot of people, and thus we were able to increase the price as well. So depending on the level of service that they want, so it doesn't matter how cheap or how expensive the property is, because the work that needs to get done is the same.
Absolutely.
So it's flat. So done.
Probably actually more with cheaper properties, I would say.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so our service starts now at $10,000 actually. If it's you know, vacation home, right? So from the viewings to contract day, to closing, to helping them with, you know, utilities and all that setup. And then if it's a rental property, same thing, like from viewings to, you know, running the numbers. And a lot of people don't have the bank account in Japan, right? Because they're not resident. So just helping them with, you know, setting up, we usually ask an administrative scrivener who can kind of act as like a receiver of the funds from property management so that they can get paid out, support with, you know, taxes and all that. Like, you know, all we don't do like all of it, but we just recommend, you know, hey, like, this is the insurance agent that we work with, and we can help you translate, facilitate the conversation. So like just really connecting all those dots for an investor so that they feel they are set up. And many of them don't even come to Japan, but they, you know, complete everything. So, you know, in a way they save a bunch of trips to Japan, especially, you know, those investors that for vacation homes, we highly recommend them to come to Japan and see the property because they're going to be using that property. But for investment properties, most people don't even see the property for them on their own. And then they decide to move forward.
So the 10,000 is turnkey, including the renovations required, including placing the tenant, everything?
Great. Yeah, so from start to finish.
Nothing to apologize for. That's pretty cheap. Sorry, pardon my language. That's pretty cheap, man.
Well, maybe it's an opportunity to increase the price. But.
Okay, so we charge a minimum of 5,000,
yeah.
But that's only for the purchase, ownership, transfer until you get the property.
Got
so
it.
for the setup, we'd be charging separately for monthly management and finding tenants, working with the property managers, setting up insurance. All of that we'd be charging separately. So we're probably around the same price figure, I would say.
Yeah, I'd love to ask you about your, I guess, structure. I mean, you know, I've talked to you and I've been following you as well. I've looked at your website. You know, I'm also connected with the Akiya Mark guys, Take and Joey, and you know, I know you helped them get their first property, right, in Oita.
Yes.
And then they're, you know, they spoke very highly of you, and so I kind of had an idea of, you know, how your service works. But so I guess like to acquire property, so that's 5K, and then after that, so are you a property manager as well, or are you kind of like the middle person who
hit. We're same as you. Everything we do, we act as a proxy, and we utilize various third parties for all the different moving parts. We and similar to you, we're not even turning some people down. We've actually had to put a complete hiatus on recruiting new customers from around the beginning of this year, and we'll probably continue until the end of this year. Because we, again, similar to you, we've had some really explosive growth. We suddenly had to jump up from like 3 staffers. We're now at about 10 staffers, and not all of them full time, but obviously a lot of them are part time. But and the hiring and the training and especially bookkeeping and accounting, which is a nightmare to find bilingual affordable ones. Mm-hmm. So what we're doing until the end of this year is just consulting. But assuming that we'd be doing the full services that we normally do, It would be, yeah, so if it's a condo unit, we can, it's a lot easier. We can do it at basically 5% of 5 million yen, so 250 plus tax, so 275. And if it's a house, that's 5% of 10 million yen is our minimum. And then it'll remain at 5% until 15 million yen, then it goes down to 4%. And if it's 30 million yen and over, it'll be 3%. Mm-hmm. But we serve very different customers. So we occasionally get somebody who's creative and wants to do a project and wants to be either hands-on or, you know, has got the risk tolerance to start off without income. But most of our investor clients are looking for complete hands-off, as passive as they can get. And turnkey tenants in there. So we serve different kinds of property. So the purchase itself will be that 5% with those minimums. And then post-settlement, it depends on what kind of services they need from us. So if they need investment, if it's an investment property and they need investment management services, we would charge them a minimum of, we work with property managers, so there's not much work on our end involved, at least until a point in which a tenant is turning over. Mm-hmm. And so we would be charging them a minimum of 1 hour per month, or depending on the property and how much income it's generating, 2% for management.
Okay.
And then when there's a new placement of a new tenant, the property managers obviously charge what they charge, which is between 1 to 3 months, depending on how hard it is to populate. And then we charge half a month on placement for managing the vacancy and the renovation and then the placement of the new tenant. And everything else that anyone needs us to do is, from the investment perspective, is just non-routine work that we charge by the hour for. And with holiday home buyers, which is, I guess, about half of our clientele these days, it depends on what they need. So if they just need utilities, then we charge them a certain amount per month. If they also need cleaning services, which anyone who doesn't live in Japan probably does, otherwise the humidity just makes, you got to let somebody open the doors and the windows, let some air in, do some light vacuuming, otherwise the humidity will eat up your interior. And so for that, we charge a slightly higher amount. If they also have a garden or a backyard, which needs landscaping, so that's another contractor that we need to constantly be in touch with, then it's a little bit more. So it's basically like a subscription model, depending on the level of services that they need from us after the settlement.
Wow, that's awesome. Thanks for sharing that. Yeah, I mean, that's great tips because, yeah, eventually we want to get to that point, like the subscription, like, you know, you kind of like productized like a lot of different
things.
We've
been tweaking it for a while. In the beginning, we did everything by the hour. But again, the bookkeeping was a bloody nightmare because every time somebody takes a call or answers an email or does something, they have to immediately go and jot down how long they've worked on everything. Sure. And it takes us, you know, 5-10 minutes to document a 5-10 minute phone call or email exchange.
Yeah.
And so then little by little, we graduated to, okay, this is what we're going to do. And even if you just need water and electricity and you don't need the internet, you don't need the gas, you don't want the insurance, this is what we charge for setup. Like there's no, sure, there's no give and take within that.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, again, if you need extra cleaning services or extra gardening services, that's a different level. We also have a platinum add-on plan. And for people, this is only for holiday homes, people who want, you know, they know they're going to need us for, I don't know, two, three, four hours a month, either to ask us questions or to help them organize deliveries or to, they just want priority response times. So if somebody calls us and says that they need help with something, we'll do the best that we can, but we've got a limited number of staffers and a limited number of hours in the day. So for people who want the faster response time and want to know that they can definitely access us via phone call or email rather promptly, every month, then we have another add-on, which is platinum service. So everyone will get a response, but the platinum guys will be prioritized.
And you're based in Kyushu, right? Fukuoka? Right. Okay. And then
we interrupt this broadcast to tell you about Tokyo Family Stays. They're a short-term rentals company in Tokyo, and they offer a home away from home experience, which is just perfect for remote working, quarantining, if that's still a thing, or if you just need somewhere quiet to get away from the world. They offer a variety of options for families, corporate relocations, or even if you're simply transitioning between homes in Tokyo. The properties are super comfortable, tastefully furnished, fully equipped with all amenities, and they accommodate up to 10 people. So really the only thing you'll need to bring with you is your toothbrush and maybe a change of clothes. They come with fast, unlimited wireless internet, dedicated workspaces, and fully equipped kitchens. And they're just a delight to stay in. Fantastic alternative to Japanese business hotels, which if you've ever stayed in one, you probably know. They're tiny, they're noisy, fine for a night or two if you're on your own. But longer term or with a family, you'll probably feel you're in a jail cell very quickly in a Japanese business hotel. So if you want to give yourself a sense of space and freedom by renting a real home, with comfortable Western beds, including all the necessities like baby bedding, children's toys, high chairs, etc., you definitely want to reach out to Tokyo Family Stays. They've been at it for over a decade. They're a fully licensed minpaku or short-term stay operator. And as a special bonus for our viewers and listeners, they're also throwing in a breakfast basket upon arrival for anyone who books and mentions the Japan Real Estate Podcast or NTI. And not only for guests, if you're a property owner, you've got an investment property that you want to tweak for higher profit, or a holiday home that you want to rent out when you're not using it via short-term stays, drop them a line today. See how they can help you maximize your property's income. And again, as a special bonus to our viewers and listeners, they're also offering a free audit of your existing short-term stay listings without any obligation whatsoever. So feel free to reach out to them at tokyofamilystays.com. Well worth a visit. And again, if you're in the market for a family home in or around the Tokyo metropolitan area, Emil's your man. Don't be shy to reach out to him as well at sales@realestate.jp. And now back to the podcast.
Okay. And then do you serve like all over Japan or just like a Kyushu, like your area?
All over Japan. Because again, we don't do anything ourselves. We utilize third parties. So in each and every city and prefecture, we'll try to find the best professionals that we can work with. And a lot of our work, unfortunately, a lot of our work has to do with replacing property managers when they don't do such a good job, same similar as what you've been experiencing in the US, maybe not here yet, but it does happen in Japan too. I mean, they're not, they wouldn't cheat you or steal your money, but they're still more or less professional, right? So we'll always find the best ones, or if we can't, if we see that we've got one that doesn't perform as well, then we'll replace them with better ones. And so from that perspective, we don't care what the property is. We work with people who know what they're doing in each and every location.
And if you don't mind me asking, I want to ask you about like your, I guess, business, your team. So you said you had like three staffers, you went from three to like 10. Like who were the original three? Like what were their roles and which roles did you add?
The original two were myself and Chikako, my partner.
Yeah.
My wife and business partner, and she was handling everything on the Japanese side of the business, and I was handling everything on the foreigner side of the business. And the first staffer we had, and we stayed like that for about 3-4 years. We should have actually recruited far earlier, then we wouldn't have been in the jam that we're in now. But we only had like an office manager, an admin person who was doing everything, all of the paperwork, all of the emailing, not with customers or with agents on sales, but all of the nitty-gritty little moving parts that have to do with management. And then now, I mean, it took a bit of time to get there, but now we've got one person who's still like kind of, it's not really a hierarchy, but the mama who knows everything that's happening in the office. And another person who's doing all of the paperwork. Another person who's in charge of holiday home management, another person who's in charge of investment properties management, another person who's doing Zoom viewings with holiday home shoppers who are actually going out and looking at properties, or agents who are doing, and she does the interpretation for the viewings. One marketing lady who's handling all of the incoming emails and the initial inquiries before it actually turns into a sale, at which point she passes them on to me. And one social media guy and a bookkeeper.
Wow. Nice. That's wonderful.
It took some time to get there, and we should have started a lot earlier. So if I can give you any tip after a year and a half, the moment you feel like you might need to hire more people, hire more people. You definitely need them earlier than you think always.
Okay. That's a good one.
Or maybe I should put it this way. As soon as you can afford them, hire them.
Yeah. I just hired, someone who can actually take care of, a few of the clients. He was my client, early on, like last year. So he knows how I work ins and outs. So it was kind of natural. He just happened to be available and wants to do. So it's been, I'm very excited about this, but I have one full-time, like helping with the administrative stuff. Yeah, two part-time, and they do my social media, like video editing. So, but yeah, I definitely, I'm very happy with them and give the credit to them. They make me look cooler than I actually am. So I really appreciate what they do. But
no, actually, I'm enjoying this. You look, I know that you weren't born into it, but you're a bit of a showman when you're doing your videos. This is like, I'm getting to see the real shoe now. This is a lot of fun, actually.
Yeah, I took a lot of courses, you know, how to do YouTube, like, you know, get this set up and like, you know, the hook and all that stuff. So I did a lot of that. So that's been helpful, but I also enjoy that piece of it. Content creation is something that I can't outsource. So I'm probably going to continue doing it for a very, very long time.
That's your brand. It's a big part of your brand, at least. Yeah. I mean, people that work with you probably know you on the more professional side, but most people who are aware of you are probably aware of that, right? That's your brand.
Yeah. Eventually, I think, you know, if I recruit, develop people in a successful way, that's probably the only thing that I'm going to be doing, which, you know, marketing, sales, and, you know, just branding, right? Because I think everything else that I do outside of that can't be done by someone else. So I don't know how long it's going to take, and I don't mind taking many years to get there, but that's my eventual goal. We'll see.
You're clearly enjoying what you're doing, so who cares how long it takes?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's the most important part. Like, you know, the burnout is like the worst enemy that I have. Like, I want to just do this for a long time. So like, let's just keep going, right? Like, I'm not in a rush to get to somewhere next year or in 2 years. So yeah, that's exactly, yeah.
Good stuff, man. Well, thank you so much for your time. I think we should think about doing other things. Like, if you have, well, you're just in Yokohama, but I would love to trail you if and when I happen to get there when you're actually looking at houses. I wouldn't mind trailing you and seeing how you actually do what you do.
Not what
you're showing the world, but what you're, when you're actually doing the work, when you're going out, when you're checking out the properties, when you're talking to the renovators. I'd love to be a fly on the wall once in a while.
Oh yeah, I would love that. And also, same to you, like, I'd love to learn more about, I guess, the business side of it too, because I mean, it's just talking to you and you sharing the different services that you have, and you know, it obviously took you, you know, you have many more years under your belt. So I'd love to learn that and see how you work with your team and work with clients. Hopefully, I get to go to Fukuoka sometime in the future. Hopefully soon.
Have you ever been to Fukuoka?
Yeah, several times. Yeah, some of my ancestors, both my father's and mother's side, they're from Kyushu, Sagaken, actually.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah.
So yeah, I'm by blood, you know, Kyushu Danji. I grew up here though, but I really love Kyushu. It's probably one of my favorite islands in Japan. Yeah.
Awesome. Hope to see you here, and definitely. We're in Tokyo 5-6 October is probably, I don't know when we'll publish this, but that's going to be our next summit, our real estate summit. So Tracy, Anton, Emil, all the people that you probably already know about, yeah. It'd be great to have you too. Please don't be shy to join us.
Wonderful. Well, thank you. Yeah.
All right. We'll talk to you soon. Thanks for your time.
No, thank you, Ziv. Very nice to meet you. And yeah, talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Bye. All right, everyone. Well, thanks for watching. I hope you enjoyed this episode. And if you want to find out more about Ziv and his company, I put the link below, Nippon Tradings International. If you want to find out more about our business and how we can help, I put the links below as well. I hope you enjoyed this episode. And if you did, make sure you watch this video next for more. And I will see you in the next one. Thanks for watching.
So there you have it, the resourceful, charismatic, and just outright awesome dude, ladies and gentlemen, Shu Matsuo. We'll link, of course, to his website and YouTube channel in this episode's show notes. You definitely want to check it out if you've got any interest at all in Akiya's renovations, DIY projects, and just generally house hunting in Japan. Well worth subscribing to his content.
Now, before we go, we're also, as always, going to tell you and also link to our other sponsor's website. That's Hiroshi Shimizu, immigration lawyer and administrative scrivener. If you're thinking about moving here on a more permanent basis, or you're already in Japan on some sort of a temporary visa, and you want to switch to a longer term or permanent one, or if you're considering setting up a local company or a branch office of a foreign company, and you've got any sort of business or visa-related inquiries, or even if you just want to find out what your options are on any of these topics, feel free to contact Hiroshi Shimizu. You can find him at japanimmigrationexperts.com. And he can help you set up a company, apply for any kind of visa, or just provide you with the best advice and extremely affordable consultation related to these topics. And he's already done that for many of our listeners. So feel free to reach out to him. Again, that's japanimmigrationexperts.com, and you'll be well on your way. And that's it from us for today, folks. Hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Japan Real Estate Podcast. Do share it with your networks, and please let us know what you think. So leave us a short rating or review on the iTunes Store, on Spotify, or just drop us a line in the comment section of wherever you might have found this episode. We love hearing from you. Hope to have you with us again next time, and until then, have a great day or night ahead. Yoroshiku!